No? Any questions from anyone?
Was recited four times, but it was written only by words of Shukadeva Prasad. So, and Narada and Vyas that told them that how he recited it is the best because there is no tight section ideas. I don't know how to.
No, there's
it's section ideas. Like
section.
Sectarian?
Sectarian.
Uh-huh.
Sectarian ideas. And Bhuvana wants to know what is this? Sectarian ideas.
Well, I'd have to look at that directly, but I can say what comes to my mind. And first of all, we should be thankful and aware. When Srila Guru Maharaj, he gives these kind of overviews, he looks at the whole of the Bhagavatam or the Vedas and he makes certain pronouncements. He gives insight to things that are not normally understood. So he is qualified and capable of giving some comparative analysis. And it reminds me of Srila Gurudev once making reference to the statement of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I think it's in the songs in the Radhastakam section. And there's one where it says, all the Vedas declare that Krishna is the property of Radharani and her girlfriends. So Gurudev is drawing our attention that this is an extraordinary statement. Generally, when someone reads the Vedas, this is not going to be obvious to them. Srila Guru Maharaj has told us that, again, some insight. The Vedas, they mainly deal, they're pointing in the direction of Krishna conception, but they're predominated by Brahman conception, which otherwise sometimes is rendered as impersonal, impersonalism, or abstract, you can say, more abstract idea. Mainly with Brahma, he said, and then some Paramatma, like the Paramtattva of the yogis, Paramatma. And he said, with a hint of Bhagavan. That's his assessment. So for Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then to say, the Vedas declare that Krishna is the property of Radharani and her girlfriends. It's a somewhat shocking, extraordinary statement. But with regard to that, Srila Gurudev, he once said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur can say this because he has a view of the whole thing. So he can see all of it, and he knows also where it's going, what it's meant to reveal, Shruti Birvimrityam. They're pointing in that direction, but he knows he's descended from the direction in which they're pointing. So he knows fully well what is the purpose of all of this. where it all goes, what the Upanishads are trying to illuminate, as in the beautiful sloka of Rupa Goswami about the holy name. He says, Nikhila Shruti Moli Ratnamala Nirajita something like Pankajanta. He's saying, well, as a sidebar, Arati, one mean, like we know when we put the ghee lamp, Ratri means night or the darkness. So Arati is derived from there. So it means the what bringing illumination. So really, it can be seen in many different ways, but we're taking the ghee lamp. What they were doing is illuminating the deity for those to see. When Srila Avadhut Maharaj visited South India, I forget the precise temple, but he was telling me, he went to some of the ancient temples there, the famous temples, and he mentioned one of them. I don't know if it was Sri Rangam, it may have been, but he said, they don't use any electricity for anything. Everything, all illumination is from ghee lamps. That's the only kind that they use. So that ghee lamp is, it's not, we're just waving or showing, but it was meant for showing the lotus feet of the deity and then the other part of the form of the deity. That's more in line with the idea. So again, and that's a very beautiful thing. Remember, the last time Srila Gurudev was in Navadvip, he was not very talkative at those times, but one day he was really obviously ecstatic, you could say, and he was singing some song. And I said, Maharaj, what is that song you're singing? He said, Nandarani, meaning Yashoda, she's doing arati to the beautiful lotus face of Krishna. Like she's taking again, that was what he was thinking about. It was the beautiful lotus face of Krishna as revealed by the arati of Nandarani Yashoda. So, and interestingly, in his poetry, when the Nitai Chaitanya Arati, do you know the line about the 108? Anyway, we have Sarupriya working on that. But there's a line where it's talking about the 108 flames of a ghee lamp. But what Gurudev is saying, he's giving a poetic metaphor, saying the 108 Upanishads, like the flames or the shika, the flame on a 108 flame ghee lamp, they're revealing their divine form, pastimes, personalities, etc. So it's a question of having that vision. So Srila Guru Maharaj, as an overview, he has pointed out in looking at the Bhagavatam, he'll say, four sittings, he'll talk about Brahma to Narada, Narada to Vyas, Vyas to Sukadev, well, maybe, Sukadev to Parikit Maharaj, then Suta Goswami's there. So maybe not Brahma. Anyway, he's indicated four. You're probably not counting Brahma. So Narada to Vyas, Vyas to Sukadev, Sukadev to Parikit Maharaj, and Suta Goswami to the 60,000 sages in Naimisharanya. So what I can think on the basis of other things that he said, he will sometimes say of the Bhagavatam that there are certain sections that they don't appear to be entirely essential in the sense that they're being mentioned to give some context, some historical context and relevance, and to provide the foundation for Krishna conceptions presentation. As an example, just simple without getting too far out there, in the ninth canto, before the tenth canto begins, there's a section where there's a dynasty is mentioned, and the names of the kings and their descendants, and it goes on and on and on to the point, because it's getting to the point of the Yadu dynasty and the appearance of Krishna. So, from an absolute point of view, we can say that is an absolutely essential to have that part. But it has a purpose there to provide foundation for Krishna conception. So in that sense it is. It's ancillary, is the word. It's assisting in that way. So when he is referring to Narada's Bhagavatam to Vyas, he will sometimes describe that as being 10 slokas. So there are 10 slokas there, and within that, after speaking that to Vyas, Guru Maharaj will say, "You told Vyas, then you meditate upon this." And then, what's the word for expand? Vishtar is one word. There are other words that mean to expand and extend. So Vyasadeva, in the beginning, we know in the Bhagavatam it's described that he's in his ashram, Bhadarika ashram, on the banks of the Saraswati River, and he's feeling some despondency. And this is after having compiled all the Vedas, Puranic literature, and presented even Mahabharata, which contains Bhagavad Gita. And in some of these Puranas, they mention Krishna. Krishna is mentioned there. Padma Purana, there's even the Uttarakhanda of the Padma Purana. Srimati Radharani is mentioned in certain places. But Narada is pointing out to him, and this is all again from the insight being given by Srila Guru Maharaj, that the way you've presented it, even though I'm aware of what your goal is, your target, but the way you've presented this, it's couched in such a way as people could misinterpret it with some degree of mundanity as reflected in sattva-guna. That's the highest aspect of the saguna plane, but still it's not nirguna. So I'm saying that's why you're feeling despondent, because the end result of this is our natural tendency is to degrade. So even when we come in connection with theism or religion, theistic culture, religious practice, we're looking for loopholes or for things that will allow us to remain attached in the mundane world. So if there's some kind of religious prescription that says you can be this much spiritual and this much material, and that's okay. That, we like that. In this regard, there's a section in the Brothers Karamazov book where of Dostoevsky, where you know the Grand Inquisitor is? That was the person in the church at the time in Spain, in charge of interrogating people and punishing them. He's known as the Grand Inquisitor, a very feared figure. But in this story, these two of the brothers meet the one who's like a monk and the other brother who's not a monk. He's more like a sensualist, a Vishayi. But he says, oh, I've written a little story I think you should hear. I forget their names. One's name is Alyosha or something like that. If somebody here knows, you can inform the proper authorities. But anyway, in that book, so one brother says, let me tell you this little story I wrote. Tell me what you think of it. And in his story, the Grand Inquisitor meets Jesus. And the Grand Inquisitor is sort of chastising Jesus. It's not exactly Narada and Vyas, but, you know. And what the Grand Inquisitor is, he said, you know, it was great what you did originally, like dying on the cross and for everybody. See, but, you know, a couple of mistakes you made. One was that you told everybody this thing about free will. They have free will, and they have the burden of making decisions and accepting the reactions for doing that. He said, you know, you just can't imagine how much guilt that's placed upon people. They really can't handle free will. Remember, the Grand Inquisitor is kind of the demonic head of the church at the time. So he's saying, what we've done, we have a solution for this, is that we let the people sin a little bit, because besides you, and who are, you know, no doubt exceptional, you're an extraordinary personality, and your saint friends, nobody can follow this, these things. So, and that people are racked with guilt for their inability to avoid sinful activities. So we let them sin a little bit, okay? And it's great, they're happy. In fact, they've handed their freedom to us on a golden plate. So we make all the decisions, we do that, we let them sin a little bit, people are happy, things are going on. And really, I don't see how you would fit in, you know, we could reconfigure things to include you at present. The whole time he's saying all these things, Jesus is just listening. He doesn't say anything. But so the Grand Inquisitor, this is the point in this story presented with all this type of irony, is that people cannot handle free will. They have a tendency to commit sinful activities, and so religion accommodates them in some way. So, what is the beginning? What does Vyas write? After Narada comes and tells him, that's what you've done. Everyone in the world will remain in the material world. And if we press them on it, why? They're going to say, well, Veda Vyas says, that's why you're the person who has to correct it. Again, in Guru Maharaj's words, he said, otherwise, if you come along and present some other idea, they'll say, what, are you a greater authority than Veda Vyas? Veda Vyas says this, and you say something else. So Narada, the word used in Sanskrit is jugupsitam, dharmakate, shasana, something. But jugupsitam, if you look at that in different parts of the Bhagavatam, it's really strong language. Gurudev knew how strong it was because he knows Sanskrit, so does Gurudev. If we look at it, we just see the word jugupsitam for the most part. But it means condemned. So Vyas was condemning him, and sometimes Guru is saying, traitor! Narada is calling Vyas a traitor. Veda Vyas, who's given all the scriptures, what did he do to betray the world? He gave religion. That was what he was supposed to do. Now he's being criticized for giving religion to the world. What kind of religion? He himself later, under the influence, having meditated on Narada's sweet chastisement, he pens the sloka, Dharma Projita Kaitabhotra Paramo Niramatsaranam Satam. Think, Kaitava Dharma, religion that's got a little cheating on the side? That's not what this book is about. Yeah, maybe in some things I wrote previously, people could get that idea or search for that kind of loophole and remain attached and go on with mundane activities in the name of religion. Saying, this book will not be like that. So I read that sloka the other day, we were talking about Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, beautiful sloka. We should all learn it. Together we can learn it. I don't even know. It's Aradhya Bhagavan Brajesha Tanaya Tad Dhamma Vrindavanam Ramya Kachid Upasana Brajabudu Bargena Jagalpita Srimad Bhagavatam Pramana Mamalam Prema Pumarta Mahan Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Matamidam Tatrapi Napara something. Napara. No, Napara means no other, but it is sometimes little variation. So, Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. Right? Religion, money making, sex, liberation. In India, they really like this. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. So they'll go like, yeah, now I'm in the Artha state making money, and then will come Kama, enjoyment. Then, see, according to the religious books, is that then when you're real old and you're not good for anything else, I mean, you can't make any more money, have any more sexual activity, because, you know, unless, of course, modern science has some solutions for that. But then, when you're, you know, basically old, useless, impotent, etc., then moksha. Then you. I mean, I'm being a little brutal here, but it's a new year. I'll mellow out as the year goes on. Figure new year, you know, can just. Once this Giriraj Maharaj of ISKCON, one of the best collectors there, he invited me to go with him to Jamaica, the land of Bob Marley, to collect for some projects in India. So we went to Jamaica, and we were the guests of these millionaire Indians, and they have these big factories, and they're, you know, doing what they do. And so we're there preaching, collecting, doing different things. And they, at one place, our host, he had us staying in the room of his son. And I know, like, above the bed, there was this big poster of, like, you know, Arjun's like this on his knee. He stepped off the chair, and Krishna's like that, and Arjun's like that. Because Indians, not all of them, just most of them, like to say, you know, Bhagavad Gita is about karma, yoga, which has nothing to do with, I'll reveal what their idea of karma yoga is in this moment. You know, because he was complaining a little bit to us, hoping that we might say, influence his son favorably, because his son was not very enthusiastic about taking up the family business and things like that. And at one point, the man pointed that poster and he said, I mean, after all, Lord is telling Arjun, get a job. That's why Arjun. Krishna, get a job. That's the message of Bhagavad Gita. Get a job. Karma joke. You have to work. Get a job. I say, gosh, you know, I just never saw it that way. It's amazing, this type of interpretation. Somehow this is all connected. So Vyasadeva is saying, the Bhagavatam's not going to be about getting a job. Right? That religion is about getting a job and worshiping your mother and father, regardless of what Tulsi Das says. Right? That's not going to be in this book. Therefore, it's called in that slok, Srimad Bhagavatam, Pramanam Amalam. Amala means without mal. Mal, impure, bad, stain, you know. Amala, pure. So the Amala Pramanam means evidence. Here, what is presented here is just purest of the pure. It has no reference point. That's what is meaning by sectarian. There's no, Guru Maharaj likes to quote Hegel saying, reality is for itself and by itself. It's not contingent upon something else. And that's, Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, that's not Srimad Bhagavatam. What does it say? Prema Pumarto Mahan. The fifth, those are four. What's fifth? Beyond that? Prem. That's what this is all about. Dharma Swanushtita Kung Sang Vishvak Seno Katatsuya Nodpadayet Yadi Ritim Shrama Eva Hikevalam. Sukadev, when he began speaking, saying, look, if your Dharma, whatever it is you're doing, the end result of that, Nodpadayet Yadi Ritim, Utpadayet means you get some enthusiasm, some interest, excitement to hear about Krishna. If that's not the end result of what you're doing, stop what you're doing. It's, what did he say? Srama eva hikevalam. It's Srila Prabhupada's Swami renders as a useless waste of time. That's what he's saying. So dharma, if it doesn't get this result of provoking attraction to hear about Krishna, sravanam kirtanam Krishna, then it's useless. Just it's dharma and name alone. So Narada's telling Vyas, this is why you're feeling despondent, because what you've given so far, even though that was not your intention, people are interpreting it that way. They're screwing out some sectarian idea about this. And that's not going to liberate anyone in the true sense. Muktir hitbanyata rupam swaropena vivastiti. Because real liberation means swarupaya krishnara nitya, be the eternal servant of Krishna. That you have in the liberated world, you have a part to play. You have a form, a personality, some seva. You're part of it all. Not that you're down here doing whatever. God is up in heaven and the clouds and the sky, you know, alone, right, looking down, seeing if there's some people he needs to punish. He's got nothing better to do, right? Just a lonely man, no consort, that idea is, it's not only partial, it's unappealing. Right? So he's saying, you have to tell people really, truly who Krishna is, and And that Krishna's not alone. There's Radha and Krishna and the Lalita Vishaka, you know, Rupa Rati, Nanda Yashoda, Sri Dam Sudam, Subal, that there's this huge, the ultimate joint family, right? Goloka Vrindavan, that we have a part to play there, Leela, to play in those divine pastimes. That real liberation means a life of love with Krishna. Otherwise, people think the only place that you can exercise these natural tendencies, innate tendencies that we all have, is in this world, and God, you know, some monotonous thing, who from time to time expresses himself in the saguna plane, you know, to catch people's attention. So Jukupsitam is condemning him for that. And I find it ironic that, I mean in a good way, that later this word Jukupsitam is used. And after, so what is Bhagavatam? We're told it culminates, you know, if it's the body of Krishna, the 10th canto is his smiling face. And what is it by structure, the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, or the pastimes of Krishna, culminating the pastimes of Krishna with Srimati Radharani and the Braja Gopis. So after all these sages hear this, because now Vyas has infused this in Sukadev Goswami, Parinishtitobi Narigunye Uttama Sloka Lilaya, Uttama Sloka. Now Sukadev's told that to Pariket Maharaj, and he looks out, and all those sages assembled from all over the universe, of all the various schools of theistic thought, they're shocked, many of them, they're shocked to hear about Krishna's pastimes. And so Pariket Maharaj, seeing that, he says to Sukadeva, well, you said in the beginning this about Jugupsitam, what is condemnable, that Nard is condemning, not that they, well, yeah, they may have heard that too, but Nard is condemning Vyas for giving religion, saying, now you have to give them the truth, the absolute truth, and nothing but the truth. And what is that? Krishna's pastimes with Radharani and the Braja Gopis, which appear to be violating all, you know, that appear to be ostensibly adharmic, irreligious. So you're saying, religion's bad, and this breaking of religious principles by the supreme entity, that's good. That's what we should all give ourselves to. He said, the faces of some of those sages, Guru Maharaj said, it was one thing, it was shocking enough for them to hear that the supreme entity is like a human being. Krishnera Jateka Kela Sarvatam Naralila Naravapu Tahara Swarup Gopavesh Venukar Navakishor Natabar Naralila Hoy Anurup. Two arms, and dressed as a cowherd boy, playing the flute, his pastimes. So that was shocking enough that they're hearing he's human-like. So, but now you're telling us, not only is he like a man, but he's like an immoral man. They go, that's too much. And therefore, getting the cue from Pariket Maharaj, they're working in tandem, Pariket Maharaj and Sukadeva Goswami. One sloka is the Ishwaranam, Vacha Satyam. Those who are the Ishwars, the controllers, and the God position, you follow what they tell you to do and don't imitate their activities. It's where do as I say, not as I do, takes on absolute quality and characteristics. And it's mentioned by example also that Shiva, one of Shiva's names is Nilkanta. means blue neck, blue throat. Why? Because when the devas, we were talking the other day, devas and asuras churning the milk ocean and nectar is being generated. But just like when you do these things, you have, there's the amrita, the nectar, the cream, and then the impurity part. So poison was also separated, but in oceanic proportion. And they thought, what to do? Lord Shiva came and he drinks this ocean of poison. On account of his, he's Shiva. His divine position. The end result is his neck turns blue. In other words, he's unaffected. So in the sloka is saying, to imitate or to even approach these pastimes without proper qualification, a drop of this type of substance will be have poisonous effects upon an unqualified person. And I find it interesting that, like, here, one of the specialities in Thailand is they have snake farms and they milk snakes from snake venom. You know, they put their fang in. And that snake venom, what does it use? From there, they will create the antidote to snake bite. But it's the antidote when you're suffering from snake bite. So sometimes, visha abdi means an ocean of poison, visha. Sometimes separation from Krishna is compared to snake bite. It's as if the devotees in that condition, they're hemorrhaging. At that time, we're told, this, what would be poisonous for someone unqualified, in other words, someone not feeling separation from Krishna, the heart not feeling the absence of Krishna generating such pull and divine substance through heartfelt expression, it'll be like poison to them. Whereas for those who are feeling separation, when they hear these pastimes, it will cure them. They'll be nourished by it. And he's also saying, this for this hrid rogam, this heart disease, this is the cure. So sometimes people would say, well, wait, it says right here that the cure for the heart disease is to hear the pastimes of Radharani, Brajagopis, and Krishna. But those in the line of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Saraswati Thakur, they're saying only when you're dhira, when the senses are controlled, you know, what does it say? Vikriditam brajabuddhu viridam jabishnu shradham dito anushranayat atavarnayat yak pratipadam, no, bhakti param bhagavati pratilabja kamam ridrovam ashu api hinuti achirena dhira. That when your senses are controlled, when you're free from these things, then at that time, it'll have this wonderful effect. But it appears that the verse is saying something else. So, because they're saying, no, if you're under the influence of mundane lust, then not to try and make your approach to the erotic pastimes of Radha and Krishna and Brajagopis. So once Srila Gurudev said something very interesting about this. He said, yes, it is the medicine, that is the cure. And he said, but like homeopathic medicine, he said, you have to identify first, what is that medicine? What is the potency, the desired potency? What is the dosage? So medicine, potency, dosage, And then he added one more thing. He said, and your time for healing has to have come. On top of it all. So he's saying, yes, this is that, but the experts will give it. In what potency, the dosage, and at what time? When? So, Srila Guru Maharaj, in the beginning, in the introduction to the Golden Volcano, Divine Lava, Golden Volcano, Divine Love, says that Srimad Bhagavatam takes us from the dome. Mahaprabhu takes us with his rendering of Bhagavatam from ontology, or the world of philosophy and such things, to the domain of divine love, to rasa. And that's why any apparent reference on a sectarian level is nothing more than that. An apparent reference, if anything, it's performing some ancillary function to give some credence to what is the message of Bhagavatam. Because which Guru Maharaj summed up very nicely in his original composition, the sloka, Yadamiyam Mahima Sri Bhagavatam Katayam Prati Putam Anubhutam Apya Labdavideya Tadakila Rasa Murti Shamalila Avalambam Madura Rasa Di Sri Radha Pada Padmam Prabhade. Saying, although ostensibly her name is not mentioned in the Bhagavatam, every sloka, every step along the way is meant us to take us in the direction of the service of her holy lotus feet, which means Radha Dasyam, the service of Srimati Radharani. That's the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna.